If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And here we are live on a Sunday night. John Pollock and Waiting coming at you. Way, hello.
Hey, what's going on? Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday it is. Yes, a nice Sunday evening show. I do like that we had this gap before we had to record because I needed it today. So thank you.
There's a lot to digest, you know, and I think for a lot of people, these, at least on this side of the world, a Sunday afternoon show presents an opportunity to watch at your leisure so that at some point by the evening, hopefully by now, you're all caught up.
This was like almost a 4-hour show.
Yeah, with the one match taking up pretty much the entire first hour.
Correct. Yes. So that was our format for this evening. What's your guess? How long is WrestlePalooza going to be in a couple of weeks?
I'll guess about this long.
Yeah, I would imagine it's going to be in this range too, 3:45 ish.
I don't think. So how long are AEW shows typically at this point? PLEs.
For an evening show, we're likely looking at an hour 15 of 0 hour matches, and then, you know, an 8 till midnight, 8 till 11:30, that kind of range. So four and a half to five. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I could see it being very similar, but I mean, at that point, it almost doesn't really matter as much. You know, it's more so important about the start time. Yeah.
Yeah, and let's get ahead of ourselves right now for September the 20th. Obviously, that's going to be a very, very busy weekend. We've got you are going to AEW, are you? Is that correct? You're not going. Okay.
No.
I will be there, and we are going to do a show on Sunday, and we will cover both shows, but that will not be happening until Sunday. So do not look out for that show Saturday night. We will remind people in the coming weeks.
We're going to be at All Out.
All Out we will be at. Yeah. That is happening on Saturday, September the 20th at 2 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're in town for All Out, then the best place to be beforehand is at Gabby's, 309 King Street West. No cover to get in. We're going to be partnering up with the Poison Rana crew, Braden and Davey, and there's going to be wrestling-themed music, drink specials from the bar of Davey Portman, prizes, and it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of the post-wrestling and Poison Rana personalities will be there. We're going to be hanging out, and if you're not familiar with Gabby's, it's a short walk to the Scotiabank Arena, which is where All Out is taking place. So we hope to see many of you on Saturday afternoon, September 20th, again, 2 p.m., and no cover to get in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hope to see a lot of you guys there. I imagine it should be pretty full.
Hope so. Yes. Yeah. Final thing for our some in-house promotion is that starting Monday, it is Post Wrestling's Open House Week. We are going to be putting on display all of our Post Cafe exclusive shows. They are going to be free for everybody. All you need to do, no payment required, no details need to be disclosed. All you need to do is sign up for the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com. And on that tier this week, all of the extra shows will be there, beginning with Post Pro Res on Monday, followed by Way and I's final review of this season of WWE Unreal, looking at the episode 6 WrestleMania episode that's dropping on Tuesday. We're also going to have a Rewind Away this Thursday covering Survivor Series 1993, Collision Course with myself and Kate from Montreal next Saturday night, and all XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. What do people get with the XL version, Way? What are they missing out on if they've never heard the XL edition?
our news of the day discussion. So over the past week, I mean, we talked all about the big stories being discussed in professional wrestling. And of course, they include topics like the Roger Jackson Psycho Stew incident, which we did a couple shows about, just everything going on with this counter programming issue. I say issue, but it's really more of an ongoing lifestyle at this point. So any topical events that don't necessarily fit into the body of our Raw, SmackDown, and Dynamite reviews will go into this section. So they are pretty much, you know, I think the biggest calling card for people subscribing to the cafe. And if you sign up at postwrestlingcafe.com for a free account, you get it all for free this week.
Check it out, and you can hear all of those shows coming
ad free.
Ad free as well, mm-hmm. So a lot of fun. We'll be traveling back to 1993 on Thursday.
Oh,
the
yeah.
U.S. Thanksgiving of 1993, the All Americans against the Foreign Fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
this is my era, the new generation.
Oh boy, yeah. And we'll also get four versions of Doink teaming up as well on this undercard. This has got everything from Smoky Mountain Wrestling to Doinks to everything in between.
To Bruce Hart, Keith Hart. Okay, what more could you want? I will have my rose-tinted glasses on, and I will greatly enjoy this conversation.
All right. On to Clash in Paris we go, as the WWE holding its final premium live event on Peacock. They were, this is it. And boy, they even gave a big farewell to Peacock on this broadcast, thanking not just Peacock for being great partners, but Rick Cordella as well, who is one of the key executives that negotiated this deal. So
they did mention that NXT PLEs will continue. No mention of Saturday night's main event, though.
Which are going to be specific to Peacock. And that was not promoted at all in terms of Peacock, which, you know, if you are Peacock and looking at these PLEs as your spike for the month, like if I'm just a viewer at home, I would want to like kind of hammer that home of why you, the WWE fan, should not be dropping Peacock. And I would have been hitting that hard. And what did you get on tonight's show? Boom. They were hitting ESPN so hard for the September 20th event. That's only 3 weeks away. And you can only imagine what the level of promotion is going to be now that this event is over.
Yeah. With the Saturday night's main event, I imagine they might just be waiting for the next one to really hammer that home. But this would be the show, because I could see a lot of people reaching for their remotes and or at least subscription packages and just canceling.
Well, especially for ones that do have to spend the $30 to get WrestlePalooza. I mean, those are the fans. I mean, that's going to be an easy drop of Peacock. Like even... Mm-hmm. Like that is going to be an interesting test case. Is our NXT PLEs and Saturday night's main event going to keep Peacock on your streaming bill, as opposed to if, say, SmackDown was being simulcast or something to that degree, where okay, then Peacock becomes that much more. We also have the library as well on Peacock. That's going to be the question: is that enough that the fan will keep that on their streaming? Bill as well. But Stephanie McMahon has a lot of alternatives for you in case.
That's right.
The best ad, maybe. I mean, boy,
I should just play her ad and just replace it with our sponsors that we prefer.
I mean, when this thing went everywhere, and when I heard this, I mean, this really was the lead. What was it not? This particular weekend, when it comes to ad inventory,
WWE on Netflix is truly the best thing ever. But there's one catch: not everybody gets that. A lot of you are still watching WWE the old school way on cable, dealing with boring commercials while I'm enjoying uninterrupted action. Let's fix that with today's sponsor, Surfshark VPN.
Yeah, boring cable that we literally have billion-dollar deals with for multiple years for SmackDown, and one of which we are exiting a portion of our product from. Amazing.
One of the fun, I would say, sort of mergings of, like, you know, WWE into the podcast space, where pretty much every podcast has a VPN ad, and wouldn't you know it, even Stephanie McMahon having to read a VPN ad and I wonder if she really got the full ramifications of it prior to the read.
What is your prediction? Okay, three answers for this week's Stephanie McMahon ad read. A, she continues as is. B, sponsor stays, but the copy is dramatically adjusted. Or C, we never hear of Surfshark ever again on a WWE podcast.
I imagine the sponsor will stay. Like, if our sort of deals are to be sort of like any sort of blueprint that I could take expectation for, I imagine these were already purchased. Several episodes might have already been purchased that they're obligated to do ads for. I have a feeling the copy will be very different than
what about some make goods for the USA Network that might make its way onto stay. You know what? Netflix is great, but man, I love picking up my remote and searching for the USA Network.
You know, in all honesty, I mean, it's a story for the week. I don't really think it'll ultimately affect too much of their business. I don't think.
Let's get back to Clash in Paris. They were at the La Défense Arena. A WrestleTix, their last number was 30,668. The number announced by WWE on the broadcast was 30,343, so slightly below what WrestleTix had. And Michael Cole calling it the highest gate in the arena's history, beating Taylor Swift last year. Okay. WWE overcharged Taylor Swift for this venue. So congratulations. And it was delivered in French, and then Michael Cole let us know just how much money these 30,343 fans paid. Wow. Taylor Swift level business.
That means something in 2025. Yeah.
It does it.
That's not personal. It's business.
Our announcers for the night are Michael Cole and Wade Barrett.
Hold on. When did he say that? Why did he say that? What's the context of that? Because that sounds like it's like directly out of a pro wrestling promo.
I think it was a talent negotiation. They were negotiating over a contract or something. He was talking about someone. I can't remember the exact one. I've listened to so many Mark Shapiro answers. I can't attach them all to certain subjects.
I have no doubt he would be the greatest pro wrestling heel manager that's ever existed.
More entertainment to their fertile ground.
Amazing.
So the arena looks spectacular. We have a red, white, and blue section making up the French flag. And I mean, one of the stories of this show was another unbelievable crowd. Very cool looking set where you had the big Eiffel Tower on top of the entrance. Like, mm-hmm. I thought they really went all out for the look, the feel. But these 30,000 people, I mean, they came to sing, they came to dance and have a good time. And it led to a pretty hot atmosphere for nearly 4 hours.
Well, they have, I would say for this entire campaign leading towards the show, they have been promoting this as the greatest crowd in WWE history. I mean, Wade Barrett says that this is officially what they are known as. Even Cena, they aired a clip earlier of him saying those exact words with the air quotes on Jimmy Fallon. So this is, I mean, they're making an effort to promote this crowd as if it was an attraction unto itself.
Our first match is Bronson Reed and Roman Reigns, and the crowd is insane at the beginning of this and would persist throughout. And the two, you've never seen two guys that have to do so little to get the maximum reaction. They mm-hmm. are just standing in their corners. The crowd's going wild. They're counting the punches in the corner in French, and they were counting French throughout the whole night. And what I really liked about this match is that you look at these two and it's like Roman is so much taller than this guy, but he worked this match to really emphasize the strength and size, where Bronson felt like the monster. Even if the visual didn't quite tell that story, I thought Roman sold really big for Reed, and you made him feel like this really dangerous monster. I just thought Roman did very effectively in that regard. So Reed takes over after collapsing on top of Roman during a Samoan drop attempt. And we see the desk get cleared on the floor, and Reigns lands a running clothesline. They go back into the ring. Reigns is battling him back to the apron and hits a drive-by. before going into the steps, and he would stop. Reed would stop a Superman punch with a Uranagi and then a Senton, followed by a Death Valley driver. And Reigns catches his suicide dive with a Superman punch from the floor, another in the ring, which only generates a two count. So Reigns calls for the spear, and Bronson hits a sit-out drop kick, preventing the spear, and sends Reigns to the floor, where on the second try, hits the suicide dive, and then climbs to the top, misses the tsunami, and the spear of Reigns is blocked, and it's into a sit-out powerbomb for Bronson's biggest near fall. He is stunned, the crowd can't believe it, and then Reed goes to the top again. He's stopped by Reigns, who hits a Superman punch and a Samoan drop off the turnbuckle before Roman finally connects with the spear after multiple attempts, pinning Bronson Reed clean in 22 minutes and 5 seconds. First of all, the match, there was a lot of post-match, as Wei mentioned. This was pretty much the first hour of the show. They had an electric crowd, so that naturally elevated things. But I really thought this was a great performance from both guys. But I thought for Bronson Reed, even in losing, I thought he came across as like this big obstacle for Roman Reigns. And I thought Bronson did really great in this match. Both of them did. I thought this was a match that really delivered.
I agree. I thought it was a really interesting match in that when they told us the stat that Roman had only wrestled 4 times this year, I mean, I thought that was pretty crazy, but also not really that hard to believe, just given in his schedule, right? But I do think it's notable because this was really the first time we got to see Roman as a babyface in a singles one-on-one match at all since WrestleMania 40. I mean, he had that match with Solo Sikoa, yes. But because that was a Netflix show, I would say that pacing was just a lot more rushed, and I would say not as indicative of, I think, the type of babyface performance we would see from Roman Reigns. A PLE offers a much different type of space, and I thought you essentially saw, in my opinion, the debut of Roman Reigns in his true babyface form in a singles capacity. And what I mean by that is the guy got to wrestle a David Goliath match probably for the first time since his original babyface run as the big dog. And I was very curious to see how Tribal Chief Roman Reigns would adapt that sort of like slow live theater style that he worked as a heel and developed so well as a heel into a babyface. And I thought the answer was, and brilliantly, wrestle like you're Hogan in the 80s, you know, which means maximizing the reaction for every bit of movement you're making. And this crowd was the perfect crowd for him to have that first match in front of. This match, I thought, stood really in great contrast to like so much of the styles that might be popular today that you might, you know, like you saw in the main event, for instance. It was a lot lower on activity, the type of match where if you put on mute, I don't think it'd be strong at all. But this was not done for a crowd that was silent. This was done for a crowd that was there to be showcased, especially in a first match like this. And it delivered like a great sort of like Hogan Andre 80s type of vibe, you know, in terms of just electricity and also in terms of just like how much they were able to get with almost every single bit of movement that they were able to do. I thought the build to this match overachieved. I mean, ultimately, this was just meant to be a stepping stone to Bron Breakker versus Roman Reigns. And because Bronson Reed did so well with that Shula Fala, they greatly overachieved it. And I thought the match itself overachieved as well.
Heyman comes into the ring. He's checking on Reed as Reigns appears from behind him, and Heyman spots Reigns and he begs off. He acknowledges Roman. Roman wants his shoes back. So Heyman hands over the shoes, and then he ends up putting Heyman into the guillotine and he puts Heyman out. And as he's got these shoes, I thought he was going to take Heyman's shoes and throw them away, but he left the man with his shoes. So Heyman is unconscious. Reed is still out. And then Reigns goes onto the desk and he cuts the shoelaces and he throws the shoes into the greatest fans of all time. So they get a memento. And then Bron Breakker appears on the other desk, spearing Roman through the US desk, and he just crashes as he is speared. So Breakker puts him through the desk, and then they are tending to Roman. Everyone is concerned, and Breakker is leaving when he turns around in the aisle, runs down, spears Reigns a second time. All the producers are trying to get in between them. Then Reed lands the tsunami, and Reigns has to be put onto a stretcher. But Breaker returns again, and while Reigns is strapped to this stretcher, takes a second tsunami. Finally, Jey Uso shows up. He tries to fight them off. Michael Cole calls on the cops to come out. When Breaker spears Jey, Reigns climbs again and hits a third tsunami as Cole yells, "You're gonna kill him!" Death is upon us here. I just guess this is, like, and this is not a company-specific thing, because I said the same thing after the Ospreay thing. It's like, when we have to write someone out of high importance, it's not about, it's just about quantitative blows that they have to take. It can't be one tsunami. It's three. It's not one spear. It's three. So Roman was left for dead here, as Michael Cole was fearing. And he was hit so hard way, I think he's going to wake up as Akuma tomorrow.
Wake up as a Street Fighter character, very possible. Yeah, that's what happened to Cody. I think, you know, he got so injured, he
left his hair on edge. Yeah,
it was. And Hiroki Goto, believe it or not, you know, suffered the same symptoms of his recent injury.
What angle is going to take out Andrew Schultz from his duties to go to Australia?
That I don't know. I don't.
So this should take Reigns out for until he's ready to come back and take on Braun Breaker,
where he will have his sixth match of the entire year,
where he could. And the way that it probably times out, like, you'd be looking, obviously not Indianapolis, but potentially the Australia show they've got in October is the next premium live event, which would probably cover for the time he's got to go shoot Street Fighter.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really, really well done angle. I mean, I almost laugh at how often they've done this, like, multiple tsunami thing. And how
and with Reigns too, like,
oh my god, yeah. And how we managed to eat it up every single time, you know, like, this guy Bronson Reed, like, he could probably lose as many times as they want, as long as he does this, like, tsunami thing multiple times after the match. I think he could still get pretty hot. I was a bit disappointed to see the end of this, like, tribal thief thing, but I mean, by the end of the segment, he still feels as hot as he was prior.
Lost the shoes. He could steal other stuff now. He could be this generation's Repo Man. But but we have now, like, after WrestleMania, there was the beatdown of Roman and he disappeared. Then there was, after SummerSlam, the beatdown of Roman for this latest return after multiple weeks. And now this beatdown for whatever this is going to be, 4 or 5 weeks that he disappears for. I mean, it does get to a little bit of overkill.
The crowd might eventually get sick of it, but at the same time, I will say that I think it's this sort of infrequency that has continued to make Roman Reigns feel like such a big star, such a big attraction, hasn't it? Like, if he was here every week, I don't think he'd be as big of a deal.
No, I mean, you certainly, I think there's that specialness. I just think you can go to the well so many times with, like, the
he should
the
have other
angles.
Reasons for being away for
maybe
a while.
he needs personal time.
Yeah, well, he's got five kids. I mean, that's more than
that reason. Could be enough of a write-off. Listen, I'm taking September off. It's been a long summer. They're back to school. Jelly Roll and Post Malone were shown in the crowd, and unlike a lot of celebrities, these guys were there for the whole time, and they looked like they were having the time of their life in this front row. So,
well, Jelly Roll wasn't about to leave, and I mean they're touring together, so I guess you know, he was probably explaining all the storylines to Post Malone.
What do you think these two heard about when they figured that WWE outdrew Taylor Swift and they're about to perform in this arena together?
Probably thinking they have a lot more to go before they reach these levels.
Do you think they got a lesson in margins backstage from an executive?
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
An extremely sweaty Adam Pearce is yelling at the Vision backstage, Breaker and Reed, and they are being told to leave the building. And for their actions, Breaker's asking, well, what about Paul? He attacked Paul. And they're ejected from the building and warned, if you guys show up, you'll be suspended without pay. Pierce was about to say, this isn't like when your uncle went on live TV and ripped on Ric Flair and he was suspended with pay in 2000 when he just went into business with himself, okay? You get suspended without pay in this company. Look at Adam Pierce, man. He was glistening. He needs some of that fireball by the end of this segment.
And he was already like this, like, once they cut to him on camera.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So what was he doing, like, off camera to work himself up into this sort of sweat? Was he, like, doing
squats? Probably doing sprints, yeah.
Might have been doing sprints, you know.
Holy Christ.
Might have just, like, poured a bottle of water over his head, you know. But he really got into character for this little scene.
Well, if he needs a break, Chris Park should be tagged in for this role.
Yeah, he'd be great in this role, too, yes.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. Well, was this match needed on this show? Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy against the Street Profits added on SmackDown for the WWE Tag Team titles. I had to do some catch up because I was out of town all weekend. So I got home late during this show. So I have not gotten to see SmackDown. My viewing of SmackDown was on my 3-hour drive home listening to the dulcet tones of Wei Ting and Neil Flanagan informing me of what happened on SmackDown. So can you bring me up to speed on Dawkins and Ford? They're not getting along now.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read too much into the scene in the moment on Friday, but it was Bo Dallas coming out now as Bo Dallas rather than Uncle Howdy, I guess asking the Profits if they can really trust each other, essentially, and the two of them giving, you know, the obvious stares that show that.
After all these years, now they're questioning if they can trust one another.
Well, listen, they trusted enough each other enough to do this video game tie-in for their entrance.
What was the tie-in here? I didn't even catch it.
Borderlands 4 is the video game. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's nice.
I'm waiting for the VPN sponsorship to make its way into somebody's entrance, you know?
Oh, that would be...
Stephanie will command the next time she walks out.
She'll come out as a shark.
Yeah. A surfing shark. Yeah.
The Jaws music circling around Cable. So, yeah, they come out in these outfits, and so the match begins, and Dawkins and Ford can't agree on who should start, so Dawkins forces his way through, and then Ford slaps him hard to tag himself in, conveying to us that they're not getting along, and B-Fab's trying to get them on the same page. Ford gets sent off the apron by the desk by Lumis, and then Gacy uses a bulldog choke as they wear down Ford for a long period of time. Then Dawkins gets the hot tag, and this guy's hot tag is always tremendous. He comes in, tope con hero onto both men, does the silencer on Gacy just nonstop. This guy is, like, if they do the breakup, I'm very high on where Dawkins can go at this point in time, because his improvements over the last two years or so have been immense.
I don't disagree. I have no confidence in saying that, though, because I don't think I've ever, I mean, other than maybe his original NXT run, I don't think I've ever really seen him do anything singles wise. So I'm curious how they would adapt him to becoming a single star.
Yeah. Well, Dawkins lifts up Gacy for the blockbuster from Ford. Lumis makes the save. And then Lumis uses Gacy as a weapon, dropping him onto Ford. All four men are down. Dawkins hits this huge pounce, sending Gacy into the barricade as Eric Rowan gets in his face, allowing Lumis to blindside. And then Ford leaps over the corner with a dive onto all of them. And as Montez Ford goes to re-enter the ring, Nikki Cross grabs his leg from underneath the ring, leading to a Sister Abigail by Uncle Howdy, sending him into the ring and into Lumis and Gacy's finisher, which is the suplex into the sit-out powerbomb, which Michael Cole made it very clear to us is now called the Plague. And Gacy pins Ford in 13 minutes and 10 seconds. The Plague.
The plague, yeah. Nice and, I guess...
ominous.
Or horrific, which is, I guess, what they're going for. Yep. So I thought it was a good match here. You know, I thought the Profits looked as good as ever, providing really a bulk of the attraction to the match. I will say, though, like the tease dissension, other than what they did early on, it never really went anywhere.
Yeah, Luchasaurus and Kip Sabian did a far more effective job when they had no story going into it.
So obviously, like, there's probably some TV where they'll continue to play it up following the loss. But I just feel like they could have worked a few more moments of that to really kind of convey the point, other than just, like, having it concentrated to that, like, blind tag or those couple blind tags at the beginning. I felt the Wyatts have been doing, like, a good job playing this sort of opposition. They're working, like, a quicker style for a heel group that feels fitting for the pace of this division. But I do think that they are still a very confusing heel act. I'm pretty sure they're supposed to be heels. You know, they cheated here to win. I think that's fairly obvious. But I wouldn't say that they're hateable at all. Like, in-ring, they wrestle a pretty fan-friendly style. And I just don't have much reason to really, like, dislike them. And I, you know, that's all to say, I just don't think they're a very good heel team, even though they might be, like, perfectly fine, decent even, you know, in ring.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot special that jumps out at me in any of these combinations that we see, and it's frequently Loomis and Gacy. That said, it's not like we had any, like, really, like, awkward transitions or sequences that sometimes these matches do feature. And the Street Profits, they look very good in this match. This had the benefit, unlike a TV match, of A, it wasn't interrupted by commercial, and you had 30,000 really hot fans, so this certainly elevated itself above, like, what this would have been on TV, for instance. So I can't call this just a TV match, but it was, you know, it was fine overall for, you know, what maybe your expectation would be for, you know, a 24-hour build.
The crowd certainly elevated almost every single match on this show.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Becky Lynch, Nikki Bella for the IC title that they note is a first-time singles match between these two and the first time in the ring together since the Rumble in 2018. Becky starts and attacks at the bell, and she has the early advantage until Nikki finally starts to fight back with strikes. And then there was this moment, and this, I think, was the one big gaffe in the match, was Nikki goes onto the turnbuckle and leaps out almost like a disaster kick from the corner. And it's like, no joke, like 2 feet away from Becky, which is fine if we're just going to, like, pretend it was, like, not even close. But if you watch this, Becky clearly was supposed to be hit by this, and her brain just goes to selling it, and she shakes her head as though this phantom kick had maybe hit her before just jumping on top of Nikki. I thought it was, like, a pretty, you know, it stood out in a bad way.
It was really bad. Yeah, like, it was the level of botch that I don't think you see too often, especially, like, on a PLE, you know, when it's a very high level. And I do, like, so it's, we're not wrestlers, but, like, I don't think Nikki is the only person who deserves blame for this. She's going to be the person that most people will be blaming for it. But, I mean, it was a clear miscommunication between the two of them. Becky not maybe sensing. You know,
if Becky didn't shake the cobwebs out, I don't think most people would have even registered that it was, like, supposed to hit. It could have just, you could have played it off a little bit. I mean, it would have been tough. It's still a kick that's missing by a mile. So
timing was off between the two of them. And it's like, for me, I thought it was more apparent to see, like, the follow-up to this moment, because I think for Nikki, like, she's still coming back relatively new, or at least relatively new in this incarnation, right? And I really felt like it shook her confidence for, like, a good chunk of the rest of the match.
I thought the follow-up to this was, it just felt like they were trying to get this back on track. Becky went for a superplex and then tries for the armbar. Nikki bridges up, and now her STS that they're referring to as the fearless lock is what she's working for. Becky tries to roll to the disarmer, but gets hit by an electric chair. The manhandle.
So the fearless lock apparently is something she was doing, like, during her original run. Obviously,
yeah, she's done this forever, but I don't think they were calling it the fearless lock.
I was just doing some little research, and apparently, like, there's documentation of this being called the fearless lock prior to, like, just even tonight. So, whatever. Okay. Like, it's not like it's a known move. But people were reacting to it because she was doing John Cena's STF.
Okay, but she used this move like plenty. This was not something she was coming up with at all. Like she always,
but she was doing it because of Cena. Now it's just it's just a little amusing that she's pulling out her ex's move.
Well,
that's all.
If we want to be real nerds about this, she does do it under the throat, which makes it an STS rather than a crossface, which is an STF.
Wait a second, Cena does it across the throat too.
Not always.
Well, Cena does it according to wherever his arms end up. Okay.
Well, his is called an STF. And then he's doing it wrong, or it's being called wrong.
He has been doing it wrong this whole time. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, we get back to this. They fight onto the steps. Nikki rams her into the post and then tries for the rack attack 2.0. That is stopped. And it's Nikki hitting the manhandle slam for a two count. Becky goes to the disarmer, but then is freed out of it. And Nikki bounces off the rope, and Becky just rotates. It was a nice like rotation here into the backslide to cover Nikki in 13 minutes and 7 seconds. I thought like there were fine parts to this, but I definitely felt this was the weakest match on the show. And the middle, this thing really did feel off in a big way from not just the missed kick, but following it afterwards. It seemed like it did take them some time to just get in sync before like the ending sequence that, you know, came off fine.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty obvious this is the weakest match on the show. I will say, you know, this is the match featuring I was gonna say the only match featuring a part-timer, but you know, Logan Paul and Roman Reigns at this point are kind of part-timers themselves. Like, I feel like by the end of the year, Nikki Bella will have had more matches or as many as
like, what constitutes a part-timer Reigns today versus one of years ago when there were just people not working house shows versus now there's no house shows? Like,
you're right. I don't know. So, yeah, who will have more matches by the end of the year, Nikki Bella or Roman Reigns? I mean, you know, take your bets. I will say, though, I think Nikki is somebody who, like, she, to me, has been doing more than has been expected of her. Like, that's to say, she wasn't working this style before. She wasn't even working as a babyface before. She spent most of that run, that singles run, as a heel.
So, and now this is after neck surgery too, let's remember.
And having a child and having a 10-year layoff or however many years. So she's coming back and she, you could tell, is feeling ambitious. She's working a lot more, like, I would say, you know, just even keeping up with her old standard, I think, would be something. But I think she's trying to keep up with a current standard, which is difficult. Now, again, we're gonna all think about that like disaster kick, whatever,
and appropriately named.
Yeah. And again, I don't exactly know what happened there, but I do feel like it's not just one person that could be blamed there. I thought once they got back on track, they did a decent job. You know, again, they had some very ambitious sequences. By the end of the match, I would say that they got this crowd back with them. But I mean, there's still a lot, I think, to be desired, at least in comparison to the best of the division, which you're going to be compared to when you're working a PLE, right? You know, I would say the intensity and just the tightness of some of the offense still needs to be improved on a little bit more. But, you know, the results were mixed here, but I do think the audiences will come out of this with at least, you know, some appreciation over the level of the ambition that these two had here. And I thought they had a great feud leading up to it. So I wonder, what do you think is that? Do you think Nikki Bella sticks around? What do you think would be?
I can see Nikki sticking around, but I certainly took this is the end of these two, like where we're going to be going with Becky. Like, this felt like this was, they're not going to be revisiting this.
Oh, no.
I don't think.
Do you think the Stephanie Vaquer team is still a thing? Do you think they seem to have dropped that pretty much, right? We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you have Vaquer still probably in this women's title situation, but I mean,
the team was never meant to be a thing, and then they just, you know, partnered up a few times. Just, yeah. But I really don't know if I see Brie coming back in right now.
Stephanie back way, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I see Brie coming back in at this point. Just because I...
Well, you can't, right? Because if Brie showed up, it would just cause everybody to stop watching WWE.
I certainly don't know if Brie could even pull off this level of performance at this point.
We move on to the good old-fashioned Donnybrook fight between Rusev and Sheamus. First, we go backstage, actually. Pierce was with Jey Uso, just asking if he's good to go tonight. Jey doesn't care about what the medical team has to say. He's bringing home the title tonight. So he would go into this injured with bad ribs. Rusev and Sheamus, we have a good old-fashioned Donnybrook fight. That means weapons surrounding the ring. We have flags of Ireland and Bulgaria, barrels, and of course, what makes this a good old-fashioned Donnybrook fight? Strategically placed bottles of Prime around the ringside area, too.
Something you'd find in every Irish bar.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. So we had kendo stick shots early on. Sheamus has the shillelagh, and Sheamus nearly lost Rusev going for the Irish curse, and this move was cursed. He had to reset and then used it on him. Rusev came back with chair shots, and Rusev is trying to cover his ears because the fans are chanting at him, and it's just these two guys beating the piss out of each other for the majority of this match, just hitting each other with everything. Rusev gets driven into a chair that he had set up in the corner and then is hit with a Celtic cross. And as he signals for the brogue kick, Rusev bails to the floor, and it's Sheamus leaping off the top to the floor and gets struck in midair as he lands with a kendo stick and is sent into the steps. Rusev then turns over the makeshift bar, which is made out of wood, and puts Sheamus through it with a uranage and applies the accolade inside of the ring with Sheamus getting to his feet, dropping Rusev onto the pile of chairs. And they make their way on top of the whiskey barrels. Rusev applies the accolade, but thankfully we are told submissions don't count on top of whiskey barrels. So Sheamus cannot give up on top of the barrel. And so
where was the Fireball whiskey advertising for this match?
You kid, but the way you described that, and again, I didn't watch the scene, it sounded like the most piss poor idea. And you're right. Terrible. Like this, they could have made this into like, you could have put your Fireball bullshit on these whiskey barrels or something to at least it ties in a little bit. But yeah, Randy Orton can be your pitch man as well. So the big spot is Sheamus getting to his feet and hitting the white noise off the whiskey barrels through two tables on the floor. So we could have had the Fireball whiskey barrels as the platform for the Slim Jim tables. This could have been beautiful, just beautiful. I mean,
great.
Mark Shapiro would have been having the sweat. He would have needed a cigarette after watching that spot.
The table could have been on fire. And they would have been a ball of hurling through a flaming Slim Jim fire.
Two sponsors,
table.
One spot.
We are right now in an era where we are straddling the two.
So as Sheamus straddled Rusev off the barrels and puts him through, Rusev climbs into the... Rusev is the first one to get back into the ring after this spot. Grabs the shillelagh, but man, Sheamus took this guy's face off with this brogue kick and just nailed him. This near fall was amazing. The crowd's on their feet. They're losing their minds after this. And Rusev hits a series of machka kicks. And then the shillelagh is broken over Sheamus's back. He kicks out. And then Rusev applies the accolade using the shillelagh in Sheamus's mouth, pulls back, and Sheamus has to tap at 20 minutes and 8 seconds. Cole noting it's the second time Sheamus has tapped out in his WWE career. Listen, for all we can say about these two, this has been a lengthy program. This was a hell of a match that they had. And yeah, 20 plus minutes.
Yeah. And
Instagram Sheamus at his finest here.
Yeah. That very pale back of Sheamus showing off some of the results of tonight's match for those curious.
He's had worse.
Go to his social media. True. First of all, like there was no shortage of risk and tough bumps taken in this match. I will say, though, I do feel like WWE has a tendency to make all of their hardcore matches come across like way more juvenile than they need to be, and way, in my opinion, like less dangerous than they probably actually are. Like
you want a fork to the ear.
Well, when we're talking about level of risk, like I don't know if they were that far off here. You know, like you could work a fork, but like, man, for me, though, it's more so like this sort of like cute dressing of like the match by having a fucking bar in there. This over reliance at this point on like the kendo sticks, which clearly hurt a lot, but I just think like they're so overdone and shit, like calling it a Donnybrook match, which is just like the least like I don't know, intimidating sounding match that you could possibly have. Like, I think in another promotion, the same match with the same level of risk involved could have been done in a much more serious tone. So that's just something I never liked.
There is something WWE. To like the WWE hardcore style, like in these types of matches that I don't think you're wrong in that kind of, there is a certain like cartoon violence that they present in these types of matches.
Why? What's the appeal there? I mean, I know you're trying to cater it towards kids, but these, I mean, you're not maximizing these bumps to me. Not to say it affected tonight's crowd at all, because I don't think this crowd treated this match like it was special. They didn't treat it like it was just a TV feud. They really got into the counting with the 10 beats anytime. Any excuse to count in your native language, these international crowds are going to love. They reacted really well to the bar and table breaks.
They got in all the big spots. And listen, these two guys worked their asses off in this match as well. Like, this is certainly the best performance Rusev has had since coming back.
No doubt. If this feud to me would, like, I thought these two were always chasing for that banger level match, and I thought they finally got there now that they're given enough time on a PLE and given enough gimmicks.
On this show, dude, we had four matches exceeding 20 minutes. I would not have expected that, and I certainly wouldn't have expected these two to get 20. So it does tell you, like, they had a lot of, like, on these PLEs, they do have a lot more latitude to do these lengthier matches, and we're about to get to two ones that got a ton of time. They announced 11 dates for Germany as part of their Road to Royal Rumble tour, which they have not announced a date for, but that is the Saudi Arabia Rumble. Among them will be, they are doing select international live events, and then they'll do SmackDown in Berlin. They're going to do a Raw in Dusseldorf, Germany, a SmackDown in London at the O2, and then Raw in the home of Neil Flanagan, Belfast, Northern Ireland as well. So we will get some afternoon Raws and SmackDowns in January in the lead up to the Rumble in Saudi Arabia. Then they also promoted the Athletic's recent list of the most impactful sports TV voices of the 21st century, penned by former guest of Pollock and Thurston, Richard Deitch, who ranked all of these and did include Michael Cole and Jim Ross. But WWE, they had gone really overtime. They couldn't mention Jim Ross here, was part of this list as well.
They did mention Joe Tessitore, who was there.
Yes, as well.
Okay. And so how many people are on this list?
I skimmed through the article. I don't know how many were listed. I don't even know if it was like a ranking, actually, because I think it's just like various names that are mentioned of like who are the most impactful voices. And it's a blurb where it's just Michael Cole and Jim Ross, even though it is scripted entertainment, they are part of this list too.
Are we approaching like the point where like Michael Cole is now becoming this generation's Jim Ross or Gordon Solie? Like, is he like the sort of like definitive voice of wrestling for this generation?
That's how they're going to position him. Like, whenever this guy retires, they're going to do the full on Hall of Fame ceremony, and he's going to be like, for the time that he's been there, I absolutely think they're going to treat him as their, like, whoever it is, your Pat Summerall, your legendary voice that is attached. And for many WWE fans, like, this is the most consistent voice that they have had. And I think it's going to be the polar opposite of the way they kind of, you know, it felt like such a struggle to ever acknowledge Jim Ross. In fact, it was the opposite, that a lot of the times he would get treated. And with Michael Cole, it's probably going to be a 180 from that. And he's going to be this revered figure for WWE. And then they also put up a list of the most PLE wins in history, with The Undertaker on top at 107, followed by Cena with 98, Paul Levesque with 92, and Randy Orton with 81. So Cena is basically now Hiroshi Tanahashi chasing 100.
Yeah. So his prior goal of reaching, what, 70 championship reigns, he's already done that. Now
it's 100 wins. He can't catch The Undertaker, so 100 is going to be the magic number to be within reach.
100, yeah, no.
That I assume he's not going to get at this next one in September, and that could be a storyline for October. Yeah, if this really does mean a whole lot to people, like, what does this random number that means second place, does that really resonate with people as a like big celebratory achievement?
Truth be told, he doesn't need anything. Like, there's already enough attraction for most people just to kind of see him for one last time in whatever location that they're at, right?
It's a random stat for
this,
them to
this adds a small side story that they can give to it. Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So second from the top is Logan Paul and John Cena. Thunderous reaction, as you can expect with John Cena, as he comes out and this place is just losing their mind for him. And much like the opening match, like there was nothing they could do wrong in this. Logan Paul, I thought, was really great in this match, and they ended up going a long time. Early in the match, we see a rare monkey flip from John Cena. He's just trying to reinvent the wheel here in 2025. But Paul lands on his feet, and we see the crowd singing for Cena. They're waving their arms. And then it's Logan Paul with, as Michael Cool describes it, a Cesaro-like uppercut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, several shout-outs in this match.
We got references to Cesaro here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, AJ. There was a end of Daniels. Days for Baron Corbin. And Angel's Wings as mm-hmm. well. So, yeah, a lot of...
Zigzag?
A zigzag, you're right. There was mm-hmm. a zigzag. That was by Paul who did the zigzag, but that was in there too. So, yeah, you're starting to get a bunch of these.
Oh, well, the Cesaro move, the uppercut was Paul as well. So
that's true, yes. Mm-hmm. So Cena fires out of the corner and goes for the five-knuckle shuffle, but Paul then avoids the AA and hits his buckshot lariat, which Wade Barrett says, that's a tough move and the best one you'll ever see pulled off on planet Earth.
Oh, please.
Which was then backed up by MJF, who confirmed that Logan Paul has the best buckshot lariat in the industry.
Yes, he did. That one, I don't know if it's as much of a shout-out.
That wasn't an Easter egg.
I don't know if Cena and Hangman have ever shared that much history. So this is like one of Logan's moves. I think like it's always failed to me look nearly as impressive as Paige's,
and because his knees buckle every time he does the rotation.
The impact is down, so all of his momentum is absorbed by the canvas rather than you know being sent to his opponent forward. So I don't know if it's a body type thing or if it's just like the way he does the flip, but it just looks like a inferior copy still. Which I mean, I wonder if he could if he's ever received notes on or anything.
Well, maybe we could have a duel if Logan Paul and CM Punk decide one day to attempt their own at one another. We'll see how those ones go. Uh-huh. So Logan Paul's splash off the top, the Paul from Grace, Cena gets his knees up for, and then Paul goes for the octopus, citing mm-hmm. his mentor, Antonio Inoki. And Cena lifts his way out and goes to apply the fearless lock, but Logan makes it to the rope. Cena pulls out a tornado DDT, and the crowd, they're losing their mind for Cena just doing anything resembling wrestling moves, no matter how smooth they are or what. But
it was U.S. Championship Cena.
Wade Barrett basically called it that. Like, this is mm-hmm. a throwback to his U.S. title run, and this is the type of match. It was a sprint. It was spamming all your moves. The crowd's going nuts for all the near falls, and it's just, what is Cena going to do next? Mm-hmm. This is where he does the Angel's Wings. Paul does the full Claudio, presses him in the air into a European uppercut, and then Logan starts doing the shoulder tackle, proto bomb, and five knuckle shuffle, which is cut off. Cena hits the AA, big near fall, and my favorite spot of this, Cena is so loudly yelling the next spots to Logan Paul that Wade has to acknowledge it. And there's Cena, obviously trash-talking Logan Paul. It was the best. He's so loud here.
He's
just
predicting
screaming
his opponent's moves.
That's trash talk. He's predicting how how easy it is to read his offense. Cena then starts throwing headbutts. Thankfully, not as clunky as a Chisero and Bandito the other night. And then hits the code red, which is, you can tell the man, just a grin on his face when he completes this. But then he gets up, boom, is hit with the titanium right hand. They didn't have a time to reshoot this one. And Paul goes for two Paul from Graces, and Cena kicks out. Paul manages the five-knuckle shuffle, but when he goes for the AA, Cena lifts him and hits the Styles Clash for a two count. As you can imagine, crowd's on their feet. Cena rolls through a high cross, hits the AA, and Paul stops a follow-up, hits the right hand, but Cena just bounces off the rope, ducks another shot, and one final AA in 26 minutes and 20 seconds. This was like, again, this... If you enjoyed like the Cena matches of that 2015 run, this was him for like the most. I would say I enjoyed this, to be quite honest, as much if not a bit more than the Cody match last month. I found the Cody match to me at SummerSlam, it took me like 10-12 minutes to like feel like Cena really got into it, whereas this one from the jump, it just felt like Cena worked super hard in this match, and Logan, excellent heel. He looked very good in this match. I thought these two just did an excellent, excellent job. This exceeded my expectations, even seeing how Cena and Cody did earlier this month.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great match. I thought this was my match of the night.
It was for me too. It was for me too.
This match and the SummerSlam match that Cena had as a babyface, they do, to me, whether or not intended, they feel like they're both Cena and the WWE trying to make good on the disappointment of the prior several months with the heel turn and those performances on PLE. So it feels like now they're giving us like nothing but fan service. And, you know, if Cena...
And let's be honest, we're probably not going to get one of these matches with Brock.
Yeah, unlikely.
Which is fine. Like, you don't need Cena doing this.
I don't see Brock taking a Styles Clash from John Cena.
Well, maybe they'll have, you know... We will see.
If these heel Cena matches were kind of like known at this point now for like being overly slow and lacking in activity, a match like this featured constant activity.
Been a greater discrepancy of a guy that works as a heel versus as a babyface than this?
I don't, you know, what does that say? Like, you know, like does it say that he was only working that style because that's how he thought or was instructed a heel should work? Or was it due to limitations in maybe his...
But let's be honest. Like, the Cena, it's not like this guy was lighting the world on fire before this heel turn. Like, there's been years of this guy that has been exceptionally limited in tag matches and just...
But he was also a full-time actor at that point, and there was a lot...
Well, it's like he's kind of cleared out this year, but it's like, you know,
are you saying it was just ring rust that he had to work out that now, you know, by SummerSlam and now he's figured it out?
I don't think it's as simple as this guy was just holding all this back and he just snapped his fingers and could do this.
Okay.
Listen, all credit to him. Like he had a spectacular match at SummerSlam and he followed it up with this one as well. And quite honestly, him and Brock, it doesn't need to be this. Like they're going to have their own, like type of match, which, you know, it's quite the spectacle that they have to live up to from that Extreme Rules match all those years ago. And I see that one being more of a violent type of kind of your massacre. Because what are your memories? It's that Extreme Rules match and the German suplex destruction at SummerSlam in 2014 as well.
Yes,
so
yes,
it's kind of this, you know, Cena facing the monster.
Well, if this was our only like reference or tribute to U.S. champion John Cena, I'm really glad they did such a great job of it, because this was, I think, everything you'd want if you were a fan of that version of Cena. Just all the shout outs to the various people with their signature moves, and just seeing Cena, the novelty of seeing John Cena, awkward body type as he is, pulling off some of these various moves with a very athletic opponent in Logan Paul, I thought was tremendously entertaining. And in front of a crowd like this, built up to some incredible near falls, each one just escalating this incredible crowd that much higher. So it created just an incredible atmosphere for a crowd that was very grateful to see John Cena one last time. And it resulted in a great match as well.
And his wife was in the front row. So Cena went to the two most important people in the front row, his wife, Shay, and then he went right for Jelly Roll. Oh, he made his way to this kid, too.
I thought you were, like, setting that up to talk.
No, I wasn't, actually. He went Russell's. Right to Jelly Roll second, and then, he found this kid who didn't bother to have his phone out to try and record this.
I feel like somebody must have given this kid a talking to, you know, like put your cell phone away in your pocket. Okay.
Yeah. That's...
Buddy, we are recording this so that you will have it afterwards. Man, they got some crazy footage of like the internet was really on this kid for like,
oh, leave the kid alone.
Really like obscenely close up shots of like, some of the female wrestlers as well. It was, very, very amusing.
This is when Cole gave the thank you to Peacock, and they've announced for Raw Monday, Dominic Mysterio, AJ Styles for the IC title. They've since announced Cena will be on SmackDown, which is Friday in Chicago as well. So,
okay. So how many dates are we down to? Do you know?
It's like eight or nine. It's something like that. And I mean, match wise, you'd have WrestlePalooza, Australia. He's promoted for. Survivor Series, and then it's a question. Well, obviously the retirement, so it's at least probably four matches, and maybe you sneak in another one in there. You do have the Saturday Night's main event now at the beginning of November. You could sneak in another one if you did something, but you're looking at probably less matches.
Could he possibly be? No, there's not enough PLEs, which is the record.
There's not enough.
Can't be PLE. Okay, unless he has like five matches on one PLE.
Maybe they announce Saturday Night's main events are now PLEs.
Yeah. Sure. Well, aren't they technically?
I mean,
now that they're on Peacock,
for the sake of this stat, maybe they could they'll just rework them.
Define premium.
I don't know. A show that NBC wants.
That's it. Yeah.
Jackie Redmond speaks with Seth Rollins, who comes out spectacular outfit that Seth had. He had these like badass like blue and pink tights that looked expensive.
I'm sure their wardrobe is quite a fortune, yeah.
Jackie reminds him that Heyman is in the hospital and Reed and Breaker are gone. But Seth says, I'm already two steps ahead, and reminds her that he won at WrestleMania 41. I never needed anyone, and I'm going to remind everyone that if I can't keep this title myself, then maybe I don't deserve to be champion. Seth Rollins, CM Punk, Jey Uso, and La Knight for the World Heavyweight Championship. Jay's got his ribs taped from earlier, and each take their turn going after Seth. They just beat on him 3-on-1, but you know these baby faces are going to mess things up. So Punk does the Dudley spot, calling for the tables with Jey Uso, but then Jay decides to super kick Punk on the floor. He doesn't have friends. He's got three opponents. So
this is what D-Von should have done to Bubba Ray.
Oh, that would have been...
this entire time.
That's how
I'm not getting... You get your own table.
Maybe that's the spot of Bound for Glory.
Could be. Mm-hmm.
So Knight goes after Seth into the crowd. Eventually, all of them make their way in. Punk leaps off the barricade, and we get a series of attacks by each, including a pedigree by Rollins to Punk, and all four men are down. Rollins is trash-talking LA Knight that he's yesterday's news, and the people don't care about you anymore. So Knight gets on offense. This gets him going. He lands a top rope elbow to Rollins, but then the BFT is stopped by a super kick from Jay, who is back. And we get Punk launching Knight and Jay with a Tower of Doom. And Punk and Rollins are on the edge by the table. And Knight takes out Punk, basically payback for the table spot, and ends up shoving him onto the table. And this table like cracks, but doesn't fully break. And Punk just rolls off of it to the floor. Looked fun.
Reinforced by Slim Jim.
That's it. So Knight then places Rollins onto the desk, climbs the turnbuckle, and he comes off the top, misses Rollins, and crashes through the desk. So he's out. Jay's spear gets caught by a pedigree. Rollins misses with the Phoenix splash, and then we see Jay in with a super kick and spear, goes for the Uso splash, but then Punk returns with Wei Ting's favorite top rope elbow out there.
The CM Punk greatest. Special. Yes. The most beautiful one.
The jumping off a cliff into the water. Look is what I'd like to. So Rollins, we get a GTS delivered to Jay, and then Rollins hits the stomp. It gets broken up. Rollins tells Punk, I hate you and your family, and says he wants to end his career and make sure he never wrestles again. But then he hits a stomp to Jay, a stomp to LA Knight. They're dead on the floor. He gets a chair, puts Punk's head through it for a stomp, but he moves, GTS is hit, and then Rollins bounces off the ropes onto the shoulders. Another callback here for these two. And then goes for another GTS when the mystery person comes in from behind, low blows Punk, and reveals it to be Becky Lynch. And then Rollins capitalizes, stomps Punk onto the chair, and it's Rollins prevailing in 24 minutes and 29 seconds as the two laugh, ha-ha, and make out to end the show. And then as he's on his way to the back, this is on the post show, Punk is looking at a sign and he holds it up that reads, "Bring back AJ Lee," which Big E and Jackie Redmond were all too quick to jump upon and speculate about AJ Lee. And I think it is very clear where we are going here with Punk needing to find an opponent to combat Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was a good match, you know, very like worthy of the main event spot, in terms of just like activity and just pace and excitement.
A lot of action to compensate for the fact that I don't, even with Punk in this match, I don't think anyone bought, it was just going to be, and so heavy handed that Punk or that Rollins is all by his lonesome. I think this audience was expecting some kind of angle. It was just going to be a question of who or what. And basically you got what I think everyone assumes to be the newest member now of the Vision. So you did get this payoff at the end. And that's what a lot of WWE audiences, they're most interested in getting a moment like that at the end of these shows, like a surprise, a plot twist.
You got a significant plot point here. That, you know, like she said something about the Vision. So like she is officially a member. I think we can assume of this group, going forward. So, I mean, you know, it was a significant, like I would say worthwhile, result, but I do feel like they didn't do such a great job of making me feel like Jey Uso and LA Knight belonged in this match. To me, they didn't really have a significant contribution to be believable participants in this match, and I think ultimately just kind of watered down, like, you know, like a really strong feud otherwise between
it is interesting. Like Jey, they gave the out that he's working injured and such, but like LA Knight, much like Monday, where it's like they put him out there, they beat him on the go-home Raw. It feels like LA Knight is in this, but he is our, like, he is the person we are not going to go and protect to. I mean, ultimately, he didn't take the fall, but that was for the story they're telling. Punk needed to get beat here.
Yeah. And, you know, Knight actually, I thought, looked really good here. Like, he's at the point now where
Knight is not the odd man out in this mix of guys on the Raw side. Like, he is a perfectly capable guy that is not going to be your champion, but can absolutely be a challenger on TV and can work with this mix of guys. And he has leveled up a lot in this run.
In my opinion, he's not even like, it's not even at the point where he's just keeping up now. I think in some ways he's actually standing out. So I mean, I could see a Jey Uso type of run for him in the future, you know, if he keeps up at this level. But yeah, I guess the big conversation is going to be Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch versus presumably CM Punk and AJ Lee. And they're almost like a little bit too heavy-handed now about this AJ thing to just kind of make you really assume that it'll
there's
happen.
No way Punk's grabbing this sign and alluding to it, nor are Big E and Jackie Redmond going, like, they were hitting it so hard on this. And, you know, at the expense of the important brand split. Is there a better place to shoot this angle than SmackDown in Chicago?
Oh, when is that?
Friday.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I guess that makes perfect sense. Oh, like, you know that they give them special passes. This is my unofficial rule. Okay. If it's in Chicago, if it's in this person's hometown, forget the brand split.
They get a hall pass. So the intergender match, where would you place that? Would that be on this ESPN
WrestlePalooza
show?
WrestlePalooza. Absolutely, man.
That's a loaded up show. Like, if we're looking then at that as an intergender match with AJ's first match back, Brock and Cena, and presumably Cody and Drew, like, that's a pretty stacked top three matches for that show on top of all the, like, the ESPNification that show is going to receive. Like, that's going to be a really big event. Really, really big event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not like, I mean, I think like Cena, Brock, like, might be far enough from, I think, the tastes of an AEW fan that they could ignore that. I do feel like there's a lot of interest from all audiences about an AJ Lee return, especially teaming up with CM Punk for the first time. So that's a big one.
What'd you think about Clash in Paris overall?
I thought it was a strong show overall in terms of presentation. I mean, again, the crowd lifts everything. They were promoting this crowd as if it was something special, and they definitely came through. I thought the set and just everything they did with the presentation made it feel like an above-average PLE. 30,000 people, I mean, it's a stadium-level event, right?
So you also had matches that got a lot of time on this show, which isn't always the case. As long as some of these WWE shows are, it's not always the case that everyone gets that. I would say there were four like really, really good matches on this show with the main event, Cena, Logan, Rusev, Sheamus, and I really enjoyed Roman and Bronson Reed. Mm-hmm. I thought Bronson performed really well, and I thought Reigns played a great babyface in the match after. It was a big angle after the fact as well. Like, really, the tag match was like take it or leave it, and, you know, Becky and Nikki, I think we agreed that was like the weak match on this show. And you did get a pretty big angle at the end involving Becky as well. So, I mean, looking on paper, I thought this was going to be a good show, but I would say like this over-delivered versus my expectations of, like, you knew the crowd was going to be hot. They were a 10 out of 10. And I thought that, there was some really solid wrestling on this show as well. So this did not feel like just kind of a by the numbers show, which maybe in the lead up, there was a bit of that feeling just naturally that, you know, so much attention is going to be on September 20th. But I would say if you sat down and watched this show, I can't imagine you came away with it disappointed that you caught this show.
Yeah, I think they figured out a good way of just giving people enough for every single PLE so that you feel like your time has been well spent and that you're not just leaving it feeling like you got a B-level show. Like, when you look at this card on paper, I mean, Roman versus Bronson, in many years past, that would have been a TV Raw match. Like, it's essentially Roman's warm-up match prior to, you know, his Braun Breaker match and then later Seth Rollins match. But they built up a strong enough story surrounding it so that it felt PLE worthy. Like, Sheamus and Rusev, I think, also would very much be a TV-level match. But because it was, like, a very entertaining, lengthy, you know, risk-taking sort of match, it got very much over. The four-way...
Becky and Nikki, we pretty much knew was going to be a TV match. Like, this got right. The Stephanie Vaquer Naomi spot.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, almost all of these, including the main event, with the exception of Logan Paul versus John Cena, which to me actually feels like a legitimate, like, you know, like PLE level, pay-per-view level match, they didn't really, like, burn too much that they, you know, can't save for the rest of their shows. And yet I would still say this crowd, judging by their response, were greatly satisfied with what they got. So they figured out a really strong way of pacing themselves throughout the year.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. All right, we're going to shift on over to forum.postwrestling.com, and we will read off some of your feedback to today's show. We're going to start off with Jesse from Queens. Hey, guys, wow, this might be the last PLE I watch live. Not sure if anyone else feels the same, but knowing that the post-match attack on Reigns is a way to write him off TV lessens the impact of it. Breaker looked great, giving the spear, and I feel the angle should have ended there. All the matches delivered except the women's match, which looked rough. Props to Sheamus and Rusev on a crazy bump, Angelo Dawkins' athleticism, and Rollins' performance in the main event. Glad Becky is in the mix with him. The promo should be fun. Can't believe Cena's last year is winding down already. He will be missed. I don't know if he's indicating, like, watching this live. I will state, like, I started this show, like, way, like, later. Before it had ended, but, you know, it's a long show but that is the case for a lot of these WWE shows. But
I never watch them live. I mean, I might start them live, but then I'll just, like, kind of pause in between, like, do other things and then just create a bit of a buffer so I don't have to sit through the commercials.
You know, Stephanie's watching these on 2X, like, the next day.
Just cut all the hacks. Yeah, I agree. I think, like, the Becky Seth promos would be a lot of fun this time around. They have
Becky could end up being, like, the main talker for the group. Like, I could see her getting, like, a, like, equal, like, role as, like, co-leader of the group or like the new face of the group in many ways. Like
they're pretty loaded, you know, between Becky Lynch and Paul Heyman.
And Bronson ain't getting that microphone anytime soon. Yeah. It's going to be a...
No. Well, yeah, maybe not in this incarnation, but like they have not paired Rollins and Becky together in a very long time, right?
Yeah, and that was a disaster when they did it. So I think that they will have a much more concerted plan this time around.
First time was as baby faces, and it was all being written by Vince McMahon. So hopefully things will be very different this time around. Let's go to Jeremy, who says, okay, we get it, WWE. Jelly Roll and Post Malone were at the show tonight. Just overkill. Cue the AJ Lee speculation after tonight's angle. I think it makes sense to pair Seth and Becky together on screen. She's made plenty of references to her hot husband lately, and it can't be as cringeworthy as their pairing back in 2019. Yeah. Overall, a nice bookend of angles to open and close a better-than-expected show. A couple questions. If it's not AJ for the probable mixed tag against Seth and Becky, who would you pair Punk with? I don't think anybody else.
Don't think it's even worth it. Like, it's so clearly right in front of you.
Ace
like
that. Steel. Of the dog, Larry.
Would it be Ace Steel dressed as Donald Trump as he was for that one segment?
Yes. How long would you keep Reigns off TV? Maybe until Survivor Series.
So, I mean, their next events are like Australia is like the second weekend of October. And then after that.
Well, WrestlePalooza and then Australia.
Yeah, sorry. WrestlePalooza, then Australia, and then, yeah, they have nothing. They have a Saturday Night's main event at the beginning of November, Survivor Series at the end of November. Survivor Series is, I think, too far. Where we're talking, that's like 2 months away. And
Which would be War Games as well. And I guess at that point you ask if the Vision would be would have a role.
In this incarnation, it does make you wonder, like, if the Vision is your big group, could they make War Games one with, like, female involved on each side if Becky is.
Oh yeah.
Do that this year.
Which is what Anarchy in the Arena was.
Yes.
As well. Interesting.
As well. I don't see Roman being out till Survivor Series. I would peg, you know, I think he misses Indianapolis and then maybe like I think he's on the advertising for the Australia show, but regardless, sure. I would imagine that would be maybe the next big show to expect them for, because I think it's only going to be around like a month of filming and then he should be back.
All right, your turn. Yeah,
okay. From Jurassic Park fan, I guess AJ Lee is returning pretty soon. She was always my favorite during the Divas era. This may sound presumptuous, but with this closing angle and the old itch wrestlers get when they've been away for a long time, that has led to AJ taking a longer break than most from the national wrestling spotlight has me imagining the mixed tag happening pretty soon. Everyone does return eventually. Yeah. I think everyone is looking at it as, you know, obviously Seth and Punk are going to be part of that Indianapolis show. And I don't think you can do any kind of match now other than that, unless you wanted to hold this off, but I think it's staring everyone right in the face. Otherwise, very solid show in general. As a longtime fan, I'm guessing someone was going to interfere to help Seth with Braun and Braun out of the picture, and I expected Becky at some point to link up on the air. His questions, what are your favorite AJ moments in WWE, in life, in anything?
In life? I don't really know her whole life, so I guess I don't really
know. Well, how about this one? How does Becky, given her ego and character, as it is to play a backseat supporting role to Seth in the Vision without it diminishing. I don't think you're going to see her playing a backseat role. I think the complete opposite. I think that she could be the front facing figure of this group, or at the very least it's Seth and Becky as your Hunter Stephanie, like of this group. Like Becky is not going to be a background player in this. I think they're putting her in there for a specific role, and she is the best talker, I would say, of, you know, I would say like just her dynamic as well. Like it's like at worst, she is on par with like Heyman.
Yeah. At this point, I agree.
I think she's going to have a major role in this group.
They're essentially the new authority, you know? Which Rollins was a part of. And I guess Bronson and Braun are the new J&J security.
Well, I hope they have a higher ceiling than that, but I guess.
I think the mix will be really nice. I think they'll create a really unique dynamic, and maybe Becky will actually be like the missing piece of the puzzle that'll really elevate this group to a new level. I mean, think about like how Rhea Ripley has been able to elevate herself by being a part of essentially a male stable in the Judgment Day. You can very much see essentially you're going to get more Becky overall on the show, which I don't think is a bad thing. To me, at least. Let's go to Real US Champion, who says, "Hey, John and Wei, enjoyed Roman versus Bronson, but did not expect the story to take up the whole first hour, but you had to take out Roman to film Street Fighter. Becky, Nikki, hard to watch. Oh my God, is that another celebrity? What do you guys think of them using Starry Night in the advertising for Clash in Paris?" Yes. Or the painting, like the
Van Gogh painting.
My assumption is that is it public domain or something? I mean, not to even say you can like I feel like that painting is one of the
did they lift
paintings.
The actual painting, or is it just like a similar looking one?
I think they just like copied the style, which like at this point that painting has probably been ripped off for longer than we can imagine. So I'm guessing they don't have
that. I put no thought into this.
I in fact like I think it's a really nice unique look for a WWE event that I'm not necessarily used to. I actually quite like it. So anyway,
Rob Lucas Stevens, I guess now I get why the tag match was added to the card last minute. Got to maximize those revenue streams. Pretty thumbs in the middle show. The last two matches were pretty good, even if Becky being the deciding factor was a little disappointing as an end to the show long story. Hopefully they've all learned something from that 2019 run if they're going back to that well. I think honestly in 2025, like that is sort of like the story at the end is, well, this has got to mean AJ Lee is coming back, and that's what fans are left like excited by. And that's sort of like what a lot of fans like, that's, you leave the show and you know what you want to see next. And they heavily, told you, like this is happening and it's just going to be a question of when she shows up.
Both as a way to set up an AJ Lee return and also as a way to just explore what these new heel characters, well, I say new, but they've been around for a long time now, these heel versions of Seth and Becky, what chemistry they might have together as a power couple on screen. I think it's definitely worth exploring all of that, you know? So I'm very much in love with the idea. My turn. We go to Nick, who says, "What brand is Logan Paul really on? Because at the start of the show, he joined the Raw brand. Now he's back on SmackDown. No mention of brand switch for him.
I don't care.
Yeah, nobody cares. Randy calling Drew a prick is a callback to when Drew called Randy a prick in 2020.
That's not a callback. That's like the most inane coincidence that you could. Hey, you called me a piece of shit 10 years ago.
I guess my question is, Nick, like how do you remember that? Drew called Randy a prick in 2020. Interesting. Okay.
All right. Let's do one more here. Brian from New Jersey. This show didn't do it for me. I was pretty tired watching most of it. Maybe because Reigns and Reed felt too slow to me and the entire match and promo segment took over 40 minutes. Or maybe the barrage of energy from the live crowd just drained me. C'est la vie. Or maybe I've just been vibing more with 8-9 match pay-per-view cards from AEW over what WWE has been offering. Whatever the case, I like the main event today the most." All right. Thank you, Brian.
I mean, we can say that the two products are very different, can we not? Like, you watch an AEW, what was their latest show?
Forbidden Door.
It's totally different from what the show offers. I mean, in the end, it's all wrestling. But, like, what this show is sort of more focused on is presenting, I think, like, atmosphere. And so is that one, too. But that one is achieving it through in-ring wrestling. And you can enjoy both, or you can enjoy one and you can enjoy the other. That's why I think like I'm so glad that the two products are starting to differentiate themselves from each other to some extent. Anyway,
To your earlier question, I'm seeing it listed that Cena has 8 dates that are left.
Yeah, somebody in the comments said that they mentioned that in the post show. So, okay.
All right, everybody. That's going to wrap things up. I will throw out. I was catching up on some stuff today. I missed a lot this weekend, but what I did see was Bandido and Hechicero from Friday's Death Before Dishonor show. And because of the technical problem, problems they had. The whole show is up on YouTube. This match is spectacular. I mean, if you have the time, I highly, highly recommend it. I watched that right after Clash in Paris. It was tremendous. So for Bandido, that's quite the back-to-back pay-per-view performances he has had with Takeshita and now with Hechicero. So that will wrap everything up, and we are going to be back coming on Monday night. We will be live at 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's another afternoon show of Raw in France. So we will be live at 9 Eastern and going through all the news. And again, it's open house week, so that means the entire XL edition of Rewinder Raw will be on the free tier, postwrestlingcafe.com. All you need to do is sign up for the free tier, costs you nothing, and you'll get all the cafe exclusive shows for the next week. So we look forward to you sampling the post-wrestling open house. So for Waiting, I am John Pollock, and that concludes our review of Clash in Paris.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.